Hey, this is Helen Paradise from SoCal, and you are listening to the Barbecue Central Show.
Start the game! Let's go!
We'll do it live.
Okay.
Well, do it live! I'll write it, and we'll do it live!
So to get that perfect barbecue, you use wood. Are you sure it's safe? Whatever. We put the lighter fluid on, strike the match, and... Oh!
Should we call the fire department?
That might be a good idea.
Welcome to the Really Big Barbecue Central Show. This is the show that talks about all things that are important in the world of barbecue and grilling. This show originates from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame City, Bomb City, USA, Cleveland, Ohio, the barbecue capital of the North Coast. I'm your program host, Greg Rempe. Happy to have you aboard here on your Tuesday evening's live fire fun and provocative show. If you'd like to get in contact with the show or you want to follow the show during off-show hours, here's how you do all that.
You can get in touch with the show by sending an email to Greg at BBQCentralShow.com. Follow us on all the social media channels at BBQ Central Show. And be sure to subscribe to the show podcast feed on your favorite podcast platform.
Anything else you want to find out about the show this evening can be found at the main website, TheBBQCentralShow.com. And here's what's happening in case you get the newsletter coming up in about 12 minutes from now. A second Tuesday of the month brings a visit from the longstanding second Tuesday of the month, 14 past the first, our guest, Meathead from AmazingRibs.com. And we're going to be talking about a topic that comes up semi-frequently. I don't even usually want to talk about it. However, it was brought up during the show last week during Sam the Cooking Guy segment, and then it was also brought up once again in Malcolm Reed's How to Barbecue Right podcast on Friday, and I thought, let's put this bitch to bed once and for all. We'll bring the expert on, we'll talk about it, and that is this: is the meat closest to the bone more flavorful? That's what we're going to be talking about in depth tonight with the one and only Meathead, and he has all the information, all the science, all the proof to let you know if you've been always thinking the correct way or if you're like the majority of folks and you're dope and you've been thinking it the wrong way because you've decided to live in the bubble that you live in. So we're going to dispel all myths, rumors, and or otherwise 14 past the hour, and then we will move to 35 past the hour, and we'll be joined by the second Tuesday of the month in the second interview spot in the third hour, Robert Moss. And tonight we're tackling the second of 10 topics that will take us through the balance of 2024. And we're talking about cooking methods and how they have developed in the South, Southern style barbecue. Was there a definitive opening style? And then how have those evolved over the decades and the centuries and all this other stuff? And there's a bunch of information. You might think that's probably not going to yield a lot of great information and content, but you're wrong. We've outlined it all, and you're going to be shocked at what you're going to learn 35 past the hour. Of course, no surprise with Dr. Robert Moss. And then we'll move to the second hour, and we will find a typical embedded correspondent, longest running one from Texas, but he's showing up in new rub seller and purveyor Doug Scheiding Rogue Cookers, launching a few new rubs just recently. So we're going to talk to how he got in all of that and what's it been like and the hang-up processes that he's been running up against. Very excited to talk to him about this whole jaunt into this portion of the live fire industry. And then closing it out this evening, somebody who has opened the show twice in successive weeks over the past few weeks. He is the former operator of Smoke and Joe's Pit Barbecue. We will welcome the current operator of Smoke and Joe's Pit Barbecue, Joe Martinez. If you followed along, you understand there. So Meathead Robert Moss, first hour, and Doug Scheiding, Joe Martinez, second hour. We say, if you would like to follow me socially, you can visit Instagram and X and TikTok and Snapchat, all at BBQ Central Show. We also say good evening to those of you watching tonight through one of our video streaming platforms. You can go to Facebook.com/BBQ Central Show or Twitter.com/BBQ Central Show. Or you can take it in through YouTube, which is YouTube.com/@BBQ Central Show. And we have a new YouTube poll question of the week. It's simple, it's to the point, and it's this. Do you like Curry? Not Steph, not Seth, not the older statesman Curry, Dell Curry, not talking about NBA players, current and former. We're talking about the spice Curry. And currently, wow, it's changed rapidly here over the last 45 seconds. We are at a dead heat of 50-50. 50% of you like it, 50% of you say no. Let me just agree with 50% of you, and we'll leave it at that. Results of the poll last week, I asked everybody, you know who Caitlin Clark is, and 62% said yes, 38% said no. And I assume that percentage might be a little bit higher after the weekend that happened just this past in Big Ten women's basketball. So I had somewhere where I was going to start, and it's not the one where I was going to start the last couple weeks because Joe has dominated the last couple weeks. Instead, I'm going to throw caution to the wind and put my neck out on the line. I was sent a piece of information by rule number one of the show, no names please, although I have this on highly credible sourcing. Of course, we're talking about Smokeslam.
Here comes the money. Here comes the money.
That's right.
Ching, ching.
For immediate release. Although, from what I'm seeing, it shouldn't be read until tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern. But I'm throwing caution to the wind. I don't play it safe. Not on this show. If you're sending me something live, local, and late-breaking, it's going to happen here on the show. I don't know what else to tell you. And I had a great open, but I'm foregoing that. Dateline, Memphis, Tennessee. Tomorrow, Mempho Presents will announce that the first annual Smokeslam Barbecue Festival has finalized its capacity list of 59 participating teams for the three-day event that will take place from May 16th to the 18th, 2024. Yes, the same weekend as Memphis in May. However, this one will be taking place at Tom Lee Park, as we know. Additionally, the World Junior Barbecue League, the philanthropic organization founded by seven-time world barbecue champion and Barbecue Central Show's guest Hall of Famer, Melissa Cookston, will host a youth barbecue competition awarding $25,000 in prizes at the festival.
Here comes the money.
It's nothing but money there, folks. There's all kinds of money.
Here comes the money.
Money here, money there, money everywhere.
Ching, ching, bling, bling.
So, poignant notes to just recap if you're joining the show. There will be 59 total teams at Smokeslam. 32 will be competing in all three categories. Those consisting of whole hog, ribs, and pulled pork. There's also a total of 33 teams that are competing in just whole hog alone, 46 teams in pulled pork alone, and 56 teams in ribs. That's typically how it shakes out. A lot of teams do ribs because they feel they're easiest to cook, easy to practice on, not horribly expensive. Typically the second most popular in a Memphis-style competition, whether it be MBN or Memphis in May, is going to be your pulled pork. And then the fewest teams do whole hog, but at 60 total teams, half the teams are doing whole hog, so that's a pretty good statistical participation of whole hogging. And, of course, the thing goes on to talk a little bit more about World Junior Barbecue League, which is, again, run by or founded by Melissa Cookston. She talked about that the last time she was on the show. And 59 total teams competing in Smokeslam. I thought it would be cresting towards 100, but well short of that, about 41 short of that, to be specific. And again, spacing all out between the three categories. $25,000 in prizes for World Junior Barbecue League. That's a pretty big payday for those youths. I don't want to say kid. I mean, they're kids. It's not like 4 years old. So a little live, local, and late-breaking embargoed news in case you didn't want to wait until tomorrow at 9 a.m. Don't anybody tell on me and get me in trouble now. I want to be seen as a rebel rouser. Anyway, it's gone, and who knows who sent it to me? I don't know. Rhymes with rule number one of the show. Taking it that. Meathead is ready to go. We'll get to them here in just 1 second. Before we do that, I'll talk to you about the latest sponsor of the show, Schwank Grills. Look, the statistics are in, folks, and already you've looked, you've decided to save money, and you've pulled the trigger, a number of you, over the past week. Thank you very much. I mean, I'm not getting anything out of it, but appreciate you supporting the show sponsors, of course. Now, if you're not familiar with Schwank Grills, here's what you need to know. It is a liquid propane or natural gas connected cooker. You decide which one. I always choose propane because I don't want to forget to choose to shut the natural gas off and then wonder why my natural gas bill is through the roof. Highly portable, so as long as you take fuel with you, this unit will travel along with you easily. The unit heats up to 1,500 degrees. It uses infrared burner technology. We'll talk about that a little bit more here in a second. But what does it mean to you? Now you can cook the juiciest and most flavorful steaks in 3 minutes or 4 minutes, depending on how thick the steak is. No more wasting your life cooking your proteins all day long. No, no. Schwank Grills does it quickly and does it with restaurant quality results. By the way, this infrared burner technology, Schwank Grills is also in some of the highest-end steak restaurants in the country. For instance, Morton's Steakhouse, Del Frisco's, Cut 432, just to name a couple. Remember, at 1,500 degrees, you can build a delicious crust on both sides of the steak without overcooking it, and the steak winds up incredibly juicy and flavorful. Truly no other grill like it on the market. Some are calling it the future of grilling. Maybe you're going to be one of those too when you put it in the backyard. You want a deal? I'm here to deal as well. I know you guys. So try this. Go to schwankgrills.com, S-C-H-W-A-N-K, grills.com. And then as you're checking out, add whatever gas supply you want. Use promo code BBQCentral. You can save $150 off any Schwank Grill. That's right. BBQ Central when you visit schwankgrills.com. You can also go to the Barbecue Central Show's homepage, click on the logo to get over from there. You can click on the link through the newsletter, a number of different ways. Look for it in the show notes here on this podcast. Schwankgrills.com, proud sponsor of the show. We're back with Meathead right after this. Stick around.
You're listening to the Barbecue Central Show. Broadcasting live from the Barbecue Central Show studios in Cleveland, Ohio. You're listening to the Barbecue Central Show. Once again, here's your host, Greg Rempe.
We welcome you back to the show. This portion, of course, brought to you by CookinPellets.com, your number one source for quality wood pellets for all your pellet-driven cookers. See what they have there, and then when you're ready to buy, head on over to Amazon.com or Lowe's.com or Walmart.com. Same great products, tremendous shipping rates that they can't offer at CookinPellets.com. Told to me by Chris Becker, who we're trying to line up for an interview. So continue to support them as you have for years and years. Good folks over at CookinPellets.com. My first guest tonight created and runs the most heavily trafficked barbecue and grilling website on the face of the earth, a best-selling author, a barbecue Hall of Famer, a Barbecue Central Show's guest Hall of Famer. I am, of course, talking about our pal, monthly contributor, Meathead from AmazingRibs.com. Meathead, before we get going here tonight, we have a YouTube poll question of the week. I'm pretty sure where you're going to fall out on this question, but it's very simple, straight to the point. Do you like curry? Yes or no?
Yes.
I'm a no. And currently,
and 60%,
60% of the YouTube voting public do not like curry, and it's not a spice. So correct me, please.
It's a spice blend. It's a mix of multiple spices. So if you want, you could call it a spice.
It's a rub.
But it's no more. Yes, exactly. It's a rub. It's a rub.
All right.
I like it in context. You know, there are some dishes it works very well with, and other dishes I wouldn't put it on pulled pork.
Much like onions, I have tried it and tried it again and tried it again and tried
you
it
don't
again.
Like onions?
And are you kidding? You didn't know?
No, I'm signing off.
You didn't know I didn't like onions?
No, I thought I knew everything about you.
Oh, yeah. It's been a hot topic for the last 5 years. You listen much?
Oh, dear. No, I mean, I thought I knew your hat size, your pants size. Yes. I didn't know you didn't like onions.
No, that's a discussion that we'll save for a different evening. But 60% mm-hmm. of the folks are saying no to curry. Acquired taste, I would say, unless you come up in that kind of setting as well. So aside from the YouTube
wait a minute.
Poll. Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Isn't there a very good barbecue cook out of California named Curry? A woman?
Who?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, Sylvie Curry.
I think she's good.
Yes, of course. Sylvie Curry.
That's it.
Yes.
Yep, she's good, I hear.
Took me a second. Yeah, she wins grand championships. Lady of Q is her competition team. I can give you her whole rundown, of course, but she is fiery and sweet like a rub. But she is definitely a cooking competitor, no doubt about it. All right, so we have a huge topic this evening, Meathead, and it's set up forward by a small conversation that I had last week with Sam, the cooking guy, and myself.
I heard it.
Oh, you heard the whole thing?
I heard the whole thing.
All right, so this was really started by a take that Malcolm Reed had, which was he thought that meat was... Well, Sam and I don't seem to agree on how we remember this happening. Nevertheless, the point of the matter is this. I hear a lot, and I continually hear it. Meat by the bone is more flavorful than the meat that is away from the bone, and we're tackling it headlong tonight. I don't even know where the hell you want to start, but let's go.
Okay. The bone affects the way the meat cooks, but it affects it from a temperature standpoint. The bone is a sheath of calcium. It can be as much as a quarter inch thick on either side. So that could be as much as a half inch of calcium. And then the center is filled with mostly fat and water. And that's very, very flavorful. But it can't get through the calcium. It can't get into the meat. So what the bone does is it blocks heat from hitting the meat on the side that the bone lives. So the meat closest to the bone is going to be a little less cooked or undercooked or rarer. So if you're cooking the medium rare, let's say you're shooting for 135 in the center, it will likely be 125 to 130 next to the bone. Mm. Whereas on the opposite side, it could be 140. So you have a range of temperatures running from rare to medium in one ribeye. I'm speaking of a ribeye now, which is
of course
the most common. I mean, chicken and chicken ribs are another story altogether. So the bone is going to have a thermal effect more than it is going to have any kind of a flavor effect. But because the meat is less cooked, it will feel and taste different.
Here's a question that I'm sure nobody's asking, but they don't want to believe what we're talking about. How come all the flavorfulness that you described that's in the center of the bone can't get through the bone? What prevents this? Because I think people want to believe that no matter what, some of it is getting out.
There's a quarter inch thick calcium sheath around it. I mean, that's thick. It just can't penetrate. How does it get out? But if you do, say, short ribs in a crock pot or in a stew, the liquid, the wine and the water can extract some of that marrow and melt it and pull it into the liquid so that when you serve the stew, the short ribs, it has the flavor from that marrow. And that's an important process. That's wet cooking. But dry cooking, which is what we do on a grill or a smoker or in an oven, it just can't get out. It doesn't affect the flavor other than from a thermal standpoint. It's likely to be less cooked. The real fun part of the leaving the bone in is gnawing on the bone, because the backside of the bone, the bare side of the bone, is likely to get really good and dark and char. And if you leave the membrane on, that can be fun. I mean, gnawing on a rib bone is just a lot of fun.
Very primal.
I prefer to, what I love to do when it comes to beefsteaks is I love to buy a huge rib primal, which is 7 bones. And $300 and up for choice and more for prime. And then I cut the whole slab of ribs off. And then I will slice that chunk of meat into ribeye steaks. I'll usually cut them about 1.5 inches. Maybe I'll cut a few thinner. But now I have ribeye steaks, or I'll leave maybe 4 or 5 inches for a roast, whatever. You have this huge ribeye roast. And then that bone section, I will grill or smoke them actually separately, and they're really good that way. And because there's meat between the bones, and if you want, when you remove the bones, you can leave a little meat on top of the bone, as you know, it's a butchery issue. But those babies are fun. I absolutely adore them.
Does connective tissue and associated fat add measurable flavor to the meat as it renders during the cooking process?
Yeah, well, connective tissue between the bones, and I mean, rib bones and the rib section, those are really hardworking muscles, and they have to contain the lungs and the heart. And so there's a lot of important things they do, and there's a lot of connective tissue. So it by itself, if you just took a beef rib section and threw it on the grill, it's going to be delicious. It's going to be tough as shoe leather. So you do want to cook it low and slow to tenderize it, get it way up there in the 190 to 200 degree range. But it's marvelous. It's delicious. It's succulent. It's full of flavor and fat. Now, the membrane is another issue. The membrane on beef is physically very different than the membrane on pork. The membrane on pork, as you know, is very thin. And if you leave it on, it can get crispy, and some people really like it. Most people don't, and generally I remove it as respect to my guests. I don't want them to have to fight with it. It doesn't really affect the flavor, smoke penetration, rub penetration, or anything significant, despite what you've read. It's just not really a barrier to flavor. But on beef ribs, if you remove that membrane, the meat is very likely to fall off the bone. That membrane's important to hold it on there. So you leave it on. Now, if you're cooking it in a wet system, if you're cooking it in a crock pot or a Dutch oven with typically your classic Provençal French style with a red wine and a bunch of herbs and everything, that the flavors in that connective tissue, that membrane, really flavor the juice and the whole process. That membrane, by the way, is the pleura, P-L-E-U-R-A. And that's the membrane, you've heard of pleurisy.
Yeah.
That's the membrane that contains the lungs and the heart on the sides and the top. On the bottom, it's a diaphragm. But that pleura is very important for the survival of the animal.
When you talk about dry cooking and wet cooking, and you gave examples of both, where does sous vide fall into that?
Well, sous vide's a wet cooking
wet
method.
Cooking. All right.
No doubt about it. When you put food in that bag, it extracts liquid. You know, a lot of people talk about the juiciness of sous vide, and the food does come out very juicy. But often, there's a lot of liquid in that bag.
Yeah.
And don't try to make a sauce out of it. It's just full of albumin and protein and myoglobin, coagulates, just gets ugly. But it pulls a lot of liquid out. It is almost a stewing technique.
Can we draw a conclusion then, knowing what we know now, where you know the meat closest to the bone isn't cooking, the people are perceiving more flavor because the meat just happens to be tender, and tenderness and flavor in the mind want to work together. So that's like, where does this saying even come from? I just diverged off the question I was asking. Well, do you have any idea?
There was a classic old song from the 30s, I think. Maybe it was Spike Jones. Closer to the bone, the tender the meat. It's a YouTube it. Check on you. Closer to the bone, the sweeter the meat.
That's the line.
Closer to the bone, the sweeter the meat. I don't find it more tender. I mean, when you get down into really rare meat, it can get kind of stringy. It gets in between your teeth. When you get it up into medium rare, I think it's more tender. It doesn't have the stringiness that rare meat has. I'm a medium rare guy. If you're a rare guy, then you're going to like that meat closer to the bone. Hmm. I mean, it's a matter of preference. But I don't think it's more tender. It's just
less cooked. Yeah.
And it can be 5 to 10 degrees less cooked.
Anything else do we need to know about meat and bones and being more flavorful?
Well, I mean, the whole topic of beef ribs is such fun because, as you know, you get down into Texas, you get these dinosaur ribs. They come from the plate, which is the front section of the rib section. And they're usually 4 bones, really thick meat, 2 inches on one end and maybe a little as an inch on the other. It has that really tough, leathery membrane underneath. But, oh, my goodness, isn't that special stuff? It's like, you know, brisket on a stick. Then I just did this 2 or 3 nights ago. I got some Korean beef ribs, which are cross sections. So you get it's like really thick bacon. It's maybe 1/4 inch thick, cut across the bone. So think of a slab of bacon. It's 1/4 inch thick, and it has 4 oval-shaped bones in it. These are the ends of the rib bones.
And they call those flanken ribs as well?
That's exactly right. They're called flanken. You're absolutely right, Greg. You know your meat.
Thank you.
Of course, one would expect you to.
Of course.
And those are flanken ribs, and the Koreans love those. Mexicans love them a lot, too. And I did a really nifty Korean marinade. Grilled them off hot and fast, and they were really good. They were a lot of fun. That's flanken. You can get riblets, which are maybe 2 inches long of bone with the meat on top. They're real. That's typically what you get in a French restaurant in the stew. There's just all kinds of fun things one can do with the rib section. And just think about pork. Everybody knows about back ribs and side ribs, or St. Louis cut or side ribs. You have the same situation with beef ribs. Your back ribs are attached to the prime rib, and the meat there is all between the bones. It's usually there's not a lot of meat on top of the bones, but as you move further down into the side ribs, you get a lot more meat on top, and they're just fun. I have a full article. Forgive me for promoting. Go to AmazingRibs.com and type beef ribs into the search box, and you'll see an article with pictures of each of the different sections and cuts and links to some fun recipes.
Are you still dumping on cast iron?
You know, oh, I don't remember having talked to you about that.
You made quite a charge against, saying that it was dirty and perhaps unhealthy.
I have fallen out of love with cast iron, and yeah. I know that's going to get a lot of enemies out there, both as a grill grate and also as a frying pan.
I've never liked them as grill grates. I think they're trouble. I've never liked raw cast iron for grill grates. They're trouble.
They're impossible to clean. They rust. And I want radiant heat to hit the meat as much as possible. So I'm not a cast iron grill grate fan. And I have fallen out of love with my cast iron pan. I have a full set of cast iron. I have cast iron griddles and I have cast iron pans. I have fallen in love with these new ceramic coated pans.
Like what?
And also, I have a ceramic coated griddle. And they are, if the ceramic is prepared properly, they're nonstick. And they're as slippery as a ski slope. And they're not great for creating fond, but one of the problems with cast iron pans, oh boy, I'm just going to get the hate mail now, Greg.
Good, thank let's you go. You bet.
cast iron is relatively porous on the surface, which is why you oil it and you create a seasoning on it. And if you've got a cast iron frying pan at home and you've seasoned it properly, go pull it out now, get a paper towel and wipe that surface. And when you do, it'll come up brown. Why?
Oil.
Because that oil is oxidizing, rancidifying. It's getting rancid. And it's also trapped a lot of the flavors of whatever you cooked in it last. I mean, God forbid you cook fish in it and then you come back and do eggs in it. I mean, give me a stainless steel pan where I can see when I'm done with it, it is spit spot clean. There's no flavor left behind. And or a ceramic pan, which is really, I mean, the surfaces are usually light enough that I can see that they're clean. Anybody who's listened to me with you over the years knows I married a microbiologist. I'm sensitive about food safety, but I'm also sensitive about flavor. And I don't want what I cooked last week in my food that I cooked tonight. So, and the other thing is I'm getting old. And my wife is too. And she has trouble handling cast iron pans. They're heavy. She's in the next room. I'm whispering.
Yeah, yeah.
They're heavy.
Yes.
And they're awkward. These ceramic pans, if you haven't played with them, go to AmazingRibs.com and in the search box type omelet and watch my very, very short video about how I make omelets. There's a really interesting trick. There's a secret ingredient in my omelets.
Curry?
And no. No. Curry could be good in eggs.
Sure.
I cook them in a ceramic pan and watch how that baby slides around and slides out and how I make a beautiful French omelet in a ceramic pan. I know it's not grilling.
Give me a name brand. What am I looking for ceramic? Is that Hexclad or some shit?
There's a whole bunch of brands. I've been using a brand called GreenPad. I just yesterday saw an ad. I think Guy Fieri has introduced a new line.
It's Fieri, by the way. Fieri.
Pardon?
It's Fieri.
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 Yeah, Fieri. And I don't know if they're ceramic. He's touting them as nonstick.
Yeah.
But, you know, oven safe and all that. So I'm interested to hear what they're all about. But I use green pans, and I haven't used other brands.
Yeah.
So I'm not comparison testing, and I'm not endorsing. But I've bought green pan, and I actually recommend, I think it's the Valencia. They have a whole bunch of different lines.
Green pan Valencia. That's line. The name of it, though. Green pans.
Yeah, it's called Green Pan Valencia line.
All right.
They have a whole bunch of lines, price erratic. In any case, go watch the video of the omelets if you're interested in this. And they're not heavy. They're substantial. They're aluminum-based, and they cook beautifully, and I absolutely adore them.
You can get all this great information at the website Meathead just told you and that you're looking at underneath Meathead's name, AmazingRibs.com. Also, we have finally put to rest the meat being more flavorful, closer to the bone nonsense. So stop talking about it and perpetuating bad information. And on the second Tuesday of every month at 14 past the first hour, you will find Meathead right here talking about all sorts of live fire topics and other stuff, should it see fit. Meathead, anything else before I let you go?
Yeah, what's going on with the Hall of Fame? I know you're plugged into them more than anyone. I haven't heard anything about this year's nominations or anything. I mean, what do we got to do? I have asked you, I know you're a modest fellow, although it doesn't come across.
I prefer
a
humble.
Okay, humble fellow. I've asked you to send me your goddamn resume because they ask for that on their website when you nominate somebody.
They ask for a resume?
Send me your CV so when I want to talk about you, I have, you know, I mean, I can say he was a proud graduate of Greenbrier Kindergarten, and that's as far as he went. And and you know, but really, when one looks at the Hall of Fame, there's a number of people who belong. There's really only 35 living members now,
right?
And there are a bunch of folks out there who belong in, and I could name some that I think belong in, but certainly you do. Especially in the communications world. And they don't have a lot. Many of the members are competition cooks, and that's wonderful. But it's a very specialized world. Stephen Reichlin, who you have on regularly, and myself, and a few others are in the communications world. So are you. And there's nobody out there. Jeff Tracy does a really good radio show. And he should be considered as well, but you are the most influential. You are the most influential person on the airwaves, and you belong in there. I mean, it's just a travesty you aren't in yet. And you know, I've been doing this for a year now or more. The Chiron at the bottom of the screen here. You've never commented on it. Humble that you are.
What am I gonna say?
I just, you know, it just seems to me that, get me your CV so I can make sure that they have all the vital information and they understand your import to the world of barbecue.
Meathead, you certainly know how to make me blush. You've had that skill right along and you certainly haven't dulled at it. So I appreciate your kind words. And again, everybody go see Meathead, amazingribs.com, the website, of course. And we'll see you back here in April, believe it or not.
And I think in April,
yes,
I'm going to have a big news item for you. I mean, big.
I think I know what you're talking about, and I think I want to start taking action.
Yeah, I've hinted at it, and the deal is coming down.
Oh?
We're this close. We're this close.
Well, now I don't know if we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
We're talking about
let me give a hint. We are this close to buying an important website.
I don't even know what you're talking about now.
Aha. Uh-huh. Aha. Uh-huh.
This close.
And it's not
buying an important.
It's not Barbecue Central Show.
I know that. What other more important, what important website? Are you going to buy Smoked Barbecue Source?
I may give you some clues off the air. I can't say any more than that.
All right. Well, me
but
Ned,
it's really cool. And I wouldn't even whisper about it if it weren't this close.
Wow. All right. Well, I can't wait to see what we might be talking about as the lead topic in April, but I look forward to it. A teaser, as always, as you leave us. It's Meathead from AmazingRibs.com right there. Absolutely. Well, what, my mind is spinning. I have all these guesses all of a sudden that are popping up in my head, but we'll have to wait. Maybe Robert Moss has a guess. We'll levy it to him. We'll start making guesses. By the way, the poll is just one even again. If you can believe it. Before we get to Robert, let's talk about Pits and Spits. By the way, if you are at the Houston Livestock and Rodeo in Houston, like at the NRG Stadium, evidently it's still going on. Maybe even for a couple more weeks. Our boys Pits and Spits are there exhibiting today. Ryan was showing the new built-in that they have, the new pellet smoker, the 304 stainless, the heavy gauge lids and body construction. However, if you are ready to step up that barbecue and grilling game, you need to add the pits and spits to the backyard. Tonight we're talking about we're talking about charcoal grills. They offer the highest quality live fire cooking experience you can get in the market today. Using either wood or charcoal, their solid fuel grills produce those classic flavors you're looking for when you have the time to fire up the grill and cook for family and friends. And with a large adjustable fuel tray, you can raise and lower the fire to control and fine-tune the heat. Their take on the very popular Santa Maria style grill. Check them out online, pitsandspits.com/BBQCentral. And when you're spelling out pits and spits, it's the double T on the pits and spits. pitsandspits.com/BBQCentral. And then use promo code charcoal central, and you get $150 off any charcoal grill that you buy online. They'll ship it to you, and you're gonna have some great fun and a lifelong cooker. How about that? pitsandspits.com/BBQCentral, code charcoal central for $150 off any charcoal grill over at the website. Or if you go to perhaps one of their dealers, maybe they give you the same type of thing. But again, if you're in and around the Houston area, you're checking out the Houston Livestock and Rodeo, don't forget to check out Pits and Spits. They're live, local, and late-breaking, exhibiting right there on the showroom floor, as it were. We're back with Robert Moss right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Barbecue Central Show. Howard Stern, Jim Rome, Dan Patrick, and Greg Rampey. The Mountain Rushmore of talk show entertainment. Now, let's get back to the Barbecue Central Show.
And we thank Meathead for joining us last segment. This portion of the show being brought to you by Fireboard 2. Fireboard 2 Drive. Monitors up to 6 different temperatures simultaneously. Connects to your Wi-Fi for cloud-based monitoring. If you want to connect through Bluetooth, you can. If you have smart speakers in your home, there's a good chance that Fireboard integrates with all of those. Find out more by visiting fireboard.com or call 816-945-2232. I'm continuing to learn and try out and fall deeper in love with my Fireboard 2 Drive product that I got a couple months ago. So if you are in the market, make sure that you give first priority and check to our folks at Fireboard. My next guest, the contributing barbecue editor for Southern Living Magazine, 2023's Barbecue Central Show's guest Hall of Famer. We welcome back our pal, Robert Moss. Robert, we have a YouTube poll question of the week. It's gone a little off 50-50 as it was just sitting as we were getting into the read there for Pits and Spits. Do you like curry? Yes or no?
Yes, I love curry. I really like it a lot.
All right. Meathead said that I called it a spice. He said I wasn't necessarily correct. It was an amalgamation of other things. Do you classify it as a spice?
It's not a standalone spice. It's a spice blend. But the thing about curry is that it's really just a collection of the sort of spices that define Indian cuisine. So curry is more of a sauce, and curry spice is the spices that characterize that. And that can be all sorts of different things like cardamom and turmeric and all these wonderful spices. So typically if you buy what's called curry spice, that's actually a blend of six or more spices.
Is that something you grew up in and liked, or did you fall in love with it after the fact?
Absolutely did not grow up with it. I don't think people in Greenville, South Carolina had any idea, that those are strange flavors. But I sort of have fallen in love with Indian cuisine over the years, both here in the U.S. as more and more Indian restaurants have cropped up, but also traveling to India. And I spent a lot of time in London where there are great Indian restaurants. Mm-hmm. And that's probably where I first sort of really took a liking to those flavors. So curry, I don't think of as a single spice, but as sort of this set of flavors that I really like.
Any idea what website meatheadandamazingribs.com is?
No, I was listening and talking about that. I was like, which one could it be? Yeah. And I really don't know.
All right, I'm going to go on record right now. Let's go. I mean, there's betting. You can bet on all sports games at all times now, so I'm going to lay my money down. I think he's going to buy smoked barbecue sauce. You ever heard of it?
I have never heard of it. So
it appears to be a very popular website, according to Derek Riches, who for years had tracked whatever the 10 most popular websites were, and it's always been Susie Bullock's website from Hey Girl Hey. And then it has always been smoked barbecue sauce. And then Meathead is typically in the first five or so, much to his chagrin that he's not number one. But Derek uses a different measuring on what's popular versus most trafficked. So that's my thought. I could be way off base here, but we'll see next month. So before we get into the topic tonight, I wanted to mention that last month we were talking about the evolution of barbecue meats. The one that you mentioned as being popular back then, but has certainly fallen out of the popularity favor now, is lamb in some form or another. And then over the next many weeks, I saw people posting about the history of lamb and how much they love lamb and all of these lamb-inspired posts that I have never seen before. So I can only draw one conclusion, Robert. We have begun to set trends on topics for social media jerks to steal and make it look like they're coming up with it. But we know who started the trend again. It's us. And yeah, we have a great...
That's the only explanation.
That's it.
It must be us.
It has to be us.
And I think if we see, you know, and curry and lamb go well together. So we see a lot of lamb curry recipes cropping up in the next month. That will sort of seal the deal.
We'll watch the trends on social media and we'll see what happens. The topic for tonight is examining the evolution of cooking methods in Southern barbecue. So it seems from its face to be a wide sweeping topic, and I'm wondering if it is.
Is it wide and sweeping?
Yes.
Yes, there's lots to talk about there, I think, for sure. And certainly maybe deep and sweeping, because you have to go way back and sort of I think like we talked about last time, it sort of talks about when you're talking about history, because barbecue has changed an awful lot in the last 200 years. And so the cooking techniques were very, very different in the 19th century than in the middle 20th century. And of course, very different from today. So it's definitely a deep topic.
When we look at it for as far back as you can trace it, is there both a singular and accepted origin method that you can find that defines Southern barbecue before it then starts to grow different heads and spread and change?
Yes, absolutely. Oh. I mean, we may have touched on it a little bit last time, but and it's really not just even Southern barbecue, though barbecue did sort of start in the South. But by the middle of the 19th century, it was almost a national tradition. So all the way to Texas, out to California, up into the Midwest, you had barbecues that were all very, very similar. And the cooking technique was almost identical, whether you were in Virginia, you're in Texas, you're in California, you're down in Georgia. The 19th century barbecue was very much defined by a single type of cooking, which was an outdoor method of cooking, direct heat over pits dug into the ground, and cooked, whole animals, or if in the case of maybe cows, split animals, cooked over direct coals on iron bars, over coals that had burned down from hardwood in these 18-inch, 2 feet deep pits. And if and the cooking technique is very much the same from, throughout the South and throughout the entire country. The meat was typically, basted with sort of a spicy basting sauce as it cooked, but the technique was almost the same regardless of where you were.
As things start to progress, time wears on, how do the different cooking methods come up, if that's even a good question to ask?
Yeah, well, as barbecue evolved over time, especially as you got to the 20th century, it went from being this outdoor tradition. It was, cooked occasionally, these big outdoor feasts, really. And, at the end of the 19th century, going into the 20th century, it became a commercial product. So guys who were barbecue cooks would start, cook a little barbecue, selling it on the weekends. The original barbecue restaurants, barbecue stands, really, they're just sort of these rude stands on the side of the road or on a downtown street corner. They were actually still cooking in a hole in the ground, just very much like back in the 19th century. Wow. Until the health department started catching up with them. But if you start doing a business, it's one thing to cook it that way, every 4th of July for a big party or a big community celebration. It's another thing if you want to make that a day in, day out business. So a couple of things you see is that what used to be a hole in the ground, they started to elevate with a pit, which is you just build it up with brick or cinder blocks, 3 or 4 feet up, put the bars across. but you still cook it the same way. You shovel coals up onto the bars, put the animals, you know, whole hogs or sheep or lamb or whatever you have up on top and cook it that way. That really was the way through the 1920s, 1930s. And then as barbecue restaurants became more formal businesses, then you start to see the evolution of a lot of different styles of pits. And that's where I think today you still see the great variation in cooking technique from places like Eastern North Carolina. If you think of Sam Jones and Skylight Inn or Sam Jones Barbecue or Rodney Scott and Scott's Barbecue to the Piedmont Barbecue restaurants of the Piedmont, North Carolina, very different kind of pit. We can talk about the different kinds. Memphis is different. Texas is different. Kansas City is different. Alabama has their own style. So that all sort of developed in the middle part of the 20th century as barbecue went from a, you know, sort of a free outdoor public celebration to a product of commerce, and restaurants really, you know, formalized and became permanent businesses.
So as you talk about advancements, you talk about the pits. Let's dig into that a little bit. Let's talk about how a pit might vary and what kind of a barbecue you might get from one pit to the next.
Yeah, and it's funny, we call them pits, right? But a pit is a hole in the ground, which is, you know, where it all started. But nobody's digging, well, very few people are digging holes in the ground and cooking on anymore. A pit is literally, well, originally it was something that was raised above ground, and it becomes like a, you know, offset barbecue pit, something you drag behind a trailer.
Now, so pit's $12,000.
Pit that's right. Yeah. Yeah. They have gotten a lot more expensive over time, for sure. If you go to the Carolinas and you go to some of the old whole hog places, you will find pits that are probably closest to what they were like in the early 20th century. Again, I'll refer back to like a Skylight Inn, which is really just cinder blocks with rebar going across it, basically a grid that raises the meat up, you know, a couple feet above the just a dirt floor. They burn all the wood down to coals in a chimney or a barrel outside, and then shovel it under the meat. It's a direct heat method of cooking, which is really important because the coals are actually underneath the meat, radiating heat up. Some of the juices drip down on the coals and steam and do all that. Very different than your offset pits like you would get from your typical Texas style pit. And that really is sort of the early evolution of it. When you move up into the Piedmont in North Carolina, you get these really unique, and once you see them, you recognize them from one place to the next. They're sort of like giant chimneys, these brick pits, and they are built with a big grill, and then it's like a big fireplace with a chimney on top. Again, they burn the wood outside of the pit in a chimney or some other fireplace outside of the pit, bring it and scatter it underneath. Now, in the Piedmont, North Carolina, they're not cooking whole hogs; they're cooking pork shoulders, but the same idea. It's 2-3 feet above the coals. Direct heat cooking right there. But the key is that fire is never in the pit. The fire is burning out here. And by the time the coals are burned down to embers, there's not a lot of smoke in the pit. So the barbecue is not smoky at all, which is quite different than what you'll find in Alabama, which has a similar style, but they are actually putting split logs up in that pit with big fire flames, right? If you go to someplace like Dreamland and Tuscaloosa or Archibald's, they're cooking ribs over a raging fire, and they cook those ribs in an hour or less because it's really hot heat. So those are very different styles of cooking. And I think this evolved over time. Memphis is very similar, except they aren't using split wood. They're using charcoal. Most of the barbecue restaurants in Memphis are burning charcoal in those pits, but it's still a direct heat type of cooking, and it leads to a unique flavor, particularly with charcoal with all the juice dripping on and all that kind of stuff.
So for holding Memphis to the side, since they're using charcoal, everybody else is burning wood in a burn barrel and stoking their pits that way. Is there a wood that one would most associate with Southern style barbecue?
It depends on where you are, and the wood that is associated with the region is pretty much the wood that is most common in that region. Mm. So it's almost always either oak or hickory, and sometimes pecan in the South, or pecan if you're not from the South, but pecan, as we say it, at least around these parts. But oak is either red oak or white oak, sort of depending on where you are. And then hickory tends to not be so much down where I am, on the eastern side of the Carolinas, but when you get up to the Piedmont, of North Carolina up toward the mountains. There's lots of hickory wood around there, and hickory sort of the preferred flavor. And then wherever people can get pecan, they'll throw it on the pit as well. But those tend to be the three big meats that you see in the South, at least the Southeast. There is mesquite in Texas, of course, but there is no mesquite in east of the Mississippi, as far as I'm aware. And then in Central Texas, they use post oak, which is a different type of oak. But that's sort of the most common wood out there. So the wood varies, but it's usually whatever the most common hardwood is in the region that you're in.
Not a lot of fruit wood down in the Carolinas, huh?
Not a whole lot. No, yeah. You'll see sometimes every now and again some apple wood or whatever, but we don't have a lot of apple trees. There are some apple orchards up in around the mountains, but no, if you're cooking with apple wood in this part, you usually get in a bag somewhere, you know, cook in the backyard. You won't see barbecue joints using it just because there's not enough of it to use in that kind of volume.
So as time wears on, we sit here in 2024. We talk about the advancement in technology, growth and population, all that stuff. How much of what we see and eat in today's Southern style barbecue compares to what it was like 100 years ago?
I think it depends upon where you were. So let's roll back about 1924. What would barbecue be like? It certainly does not look like anything that you'd be getting at your typical craft barbecue joint these days. That's an absolutely different type of cooking. So I think of someplace like Fresh Air Barbecue in Jackson, Georgia, which was founded in 1920. So it would have been cooking in 1924. They have a giant, when you first walk in the door, first of all, you smell smoke just overwhelming you as you approach the door. But you step inside, they actually have a giant brick pit, open brick pit behind the counter that's been there for a long, long time. They're cooking over direct heat. They're cooking pork, and maybe it's either shoulders or hams. I'm not sure, but they're cooking pieces of pork in there, chopping it up fine. That's probably more like what you'll get in the 1920s. No brisket back then. Nobody was cooking brisket. That really didn't come around to the 60s or really later 70s when the beef industry started. You started having slaughterhouses that were selling pre-cut beef in the pre-cut portions. The Texas barbecue joints back in the 50s, they were buying like whole four quarters of beef, chopping up there. A lot of them were butcher shops. They would sell the good cuts, put the less desirable cuts on the pit. But no, brisket was not even really a thing back then. One of the big things you did not have, as far as I can tell, probably until the 70s or maybe 80s, is really the offset style of cooking, where you have the firebox in the side and the big chamber that draws all the smoke through. Some of the Texas joints did, like if you look at Kreitz Market or Smitty's, they do have those sort of brick pits with a firebox on the side. And so they were sort of moving toward the offset. But by and large, smoking meat that way in the indirect way of cooking, where the heat's off to the side and you're just pulling, or the flame is off to the side, you're pulling heat and smoke across it. That's really a much, much later thing. So 100 years ago, you would not have found smoked meat like that. It was much more barbecued meat, which is cooked over coals, cooked over direct heat, and, generally right on a grate straight over the fire.
Breaking it down as he always does, it's our monthly guest, Robert Moss. You can find him at his website, robertfmoss.com, on social media as well. Robert, appreciate you breaking down this topic, and I'm looking forward to our April topic as we get going.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Greg.
You got it. Robert Moss, killing it as always, giving you your barbecue history lessons that you didn't even know you needed. So, yes. Now, question is, can I get out in 1 minute? We're all going to find out together. Stick around.
Continuing to produce incredibly mediocre content in an exceptionally professional way. You're listening and watching the Barbecue Central Show. Once again, here's your host, Greg Rampe.
All right, so far so good. We thank Robert Moss for joining us last segment. RobertFMoss.com is his website, and if you missed Meathead, we'll recap all that here in just a few short minutes. We are headed to the second hour for Fresh Your Libations, and we have a second 60 minutes that'll blow your doors off. You're listening and watching the Barbecue Central Show. Hang on.